Time for some Mishlei. That time of the week. We are in the 21st chapter. Perichav Aleph. We're on Pasuk Tes Zion or Yud Zion?
Yud Zion.
No, I think we haven't done 16 yet.
No.
Let's do Tes Zion. Thank you to the Begels, Jerry and Sandy Begel, for sponsoring tonight's class in memory of Anne Begel and Shemesh Haven Aliyah. Okay. Adam Toa Midarach Haskel, a person who is Toeh. Toeh, interestingly enough, is sometimes spelled with a tet and sometimes spelled with a tet. They mean different things, but they're very similar. A Toeh with a tet is to make a mistake, like a ta'ut, and a Toeh with a tet is to wander, like goes off the path. So Toeh here, Adam Toeh Midarach Haskel means one who wanders off the path of Haskel, Seichel. Right? He lost his marbles. You know, he's not thinking clearly. So that kind of person, Bikahal Rifaim Yanuach, will rest in the congregation of the Rifaim. The Rifaim is a difficult word to translate here. If you were to look at Rashi, so he says, Ba'adas Gehenim. Rifaim here means the underworld, Gehenim. But if you look in the Zura Sion, he says it's referring to Haim HaMesim Shinirpu V'Nechlishu. The word Rifion means to like lose grip or loosened. People that are unconnected. Rifaim, actually we had it earlier in the Sefer, apparently, in the ninth parak, that it means weakened. Such weakened, like terminally weakened, meaning dead. So that's how the Zura Sion says it here, that someone who goes off the path will be weakened. It seems like, it's not that he'll be weakened, his places with the weakened. So, Rabbeinu Yonah explains here that this is sort of the consequence of someone who, when they veer off the path, doesn't feel the need to get back on the path. Who nimshach achrei ha'taiva, he is drawn after Malkum Shmuel, he's drawn after the desires, v'yamra biglala es pi ha'nefesh ha'chachma. And therefore, you sort of eschew, you set away, or I don't know if yamra here means embitter, but he doesn't want the way of the of wisdom. Lo na'ava amdu ben ha'chaim. Lo na'ave amdo ben ha'chaim. Ava ra'oi v'yafel anuach ben ha'mesim. V'yashuvu arvas hizosav el sharasham, says Rabbeinu Yonah. If people are living, but they're living in a way which is unbecoming of how to make the most of life, so then naturally it's better for them, or it's natural for them that they'll end up just being dead. I'm not sure if this is literally saying that they'll die, but it's saying at least the kahal rishayim yanuach. Yanuach is an interesting word. As we're translating it as they will find their rest in the congregation of the dead, but Yanuach also, interestingly, is connected to another word of Noach. Right? What does the word Noach mean? It's Noachli. Anyone know that phrase in Hebrew? It's comfortable for me. Noachli, it's comfortable. So someone who veers off the path, and I've talked about this somewhat recently, maybe a few months ago, in the Tuesday Parshas Shir, which was a reiteration of a drasha that I gave a few years ago, that the Gemara tells us in Erevin, that the Gemara tells us, Noach lo la'adam she lo nivra mi she nivra. It is better for man to have never been created than for man to have been created. And it's obviously a weird statement. What does that mean? Better for us to not have been created? So what are we doing here? This is obviously not in any way a recommendation to do something terrible to you or somebody else. But what it is saying is that then maybe there's something in the cosmos which is more beneficial to us than being in this world. Okay, that's one, perhaps the most pessimistic or cynical way to look at that Gemara. There are other ways to look at the Gemara. The Maharsha says that look at the odds. The odds are, how many negative mitzvahs are there in the Torah? Negative, 365. And how many positives? 248, right? Overall, 613, 365 plus 248. So, you have more chances of doing something wrong or something right? More chances to do something wrong. So says the Marsha, you know why the Gemara says, better to not be alive? Because once you're alive, the odds are against you. That's all it's saying. The odds are against you. But that's not the only way to understand the Gemara. Rav Mordechai Yosef, line of the Mashal Elch, explains beautifully that the word the Gemara uses is not Tov lo la'adam. It's not better for man to never be created, but Noach lo la'adam. Noach lo la'adam means it's more comfortable to not have been created. It's more comfortable to not be in this world. The world that we live in is not meant to be comfortable. You're meant to try, you're meant to attempt, you're meant to put in effort, and you're meant to struggle. That's what the purpose of the world is. We struggle in order to grow. But if, however, you want to not go in the way of life, as Rabbi Yonah is saying here, if you are drawn after the taiva, so then, although this is not exactly what Rabbi Yonah is saying, but he says, "Lo na'ave amdo ben ha'chayim." It's not nice for that person to be with among those who are living. Meaning those who are living life to the fullest. They're making the most of their opportunities to grow, to struggle, and therefore to develop themselves. But for somebody who's veered off the path, who has gone after their desires, they don't want to put in the work. They don't want to put in the effort. And I think in some ways this is each person every day. You know, some days you're in the mood. Some days you get up, maybe you had a good night's sleep, you had a good diet, you got some good news, whatever, you're in a good mood, and then you're ready for the challenge to be part of those who are chayim, those who are living, those who are putting in the effort, who aren't chasing after the noach of life, the comfort of life. But then other days, maybe sometimes, you are not as comfortable and not as willing to be uncomfortable. And therefore you have a situation like this. Adam Toa Midera Haskel, Vikahal Rifaim, Yanuach. Yanuach means not only rest, but also you'll be comfortable. You'll be comfortable among those who are of weakened values. Or as the Mitzvah Sion says, the ones who are dead, people who die. I don't exactly know what that means. I would translate it more figuratively as those who aren't really making the most of life. You know, it's very sad to see sometimes people who aren't making the most of their opportunities, their real skills. They'd rather just sit at home and do nothing or not go out and make the most of them. But that's not for now. Let's see, there's something else. There, Benyon has a longer piece. Yeah. Gam mitamim acherim yesh leganosa kinei ba'alea osim esha'olam haza ikar kasher yismach bahavei lav. The people who veer off the path, what are they really saying? They're really expressing that this world is the entirety of life. This is where we want to be. I'm going to make the most of it while I'm here. But in a physical way, in a this worldly way. In the physicality. What does it mean that if you're enjoying yourself, you're indulging yourself, the more you indulge in something, the more it will sort of work against you once you don't have it anymore, right? It's an interesting line. L'spi hasimcha bo, to the extent that a person rejoices, I would say, in the pleasures of the world, so then yirbe atzavo ba'azivaso. That's how much he'll be saddened when he no longer has those pleasures. This is actually a very insightful line from Rabbeinu Yonah. Although it doesn't sound like such a a groundbreaking concept. If you have something, once you lose it, you're going to be sad, you're going to miss it. The more you feel you have, the more you'll miss it when you don't have it. But recent psychological testing has showed and I've talked about this recently also, the immense consequence that comes along with engaging our dopamine levels. Right, to the extent that you press on the dopamine, right? I talked about this in the book called Dopamine Nation. The book called Dopamine Nation, I think her name is Anne Lemke, doctor of psychology, I think. She does a lot of work with addictions. And what she found, or what she posits, I think it's still in the works, but I've seen it corroborated in other books also. I watched or listened to a podcast about it recently too. The more you press on the dopamine, right, the things that bring you that instantaneous pleasure, the more when you don't have it, not only will you just want it back, it's not just that, it's that you will have a chronic pain without it, right? So that our pain balance, our pain pleasure is a balance. And the more you press down on one side, the more this side is going to shoot up to the extent that when you don't have this, you're going to feel this a lot more acutely. So for instance, if you enjoy a nice piece of chocolate cake once every couple of days, but to not have that chocolate cake is not so painful because you enjoy it. And in the moment that you enjoy it, it's good, but you're not like investing in it so much that dopamine is going to sort of give you so much of a high. So then when you don't have it, it's less painful. However, when you're constantly pushing the dopamine button, and there are actually studies done about this with lab rats that I forgot what exactly they gave the lab rat, but they had some kind of mechanism attached to their body by licking it through an IV or something. Yeah, something like that. And there's this button in the cage, and the rat had the opportunity whenever they wanted to just push the button. It stimulated the dopamine or whatever it was. Push the button until he died. That's how the experiment went. If you give a person the opportunity to continuously, increase their dopamine levels, they will be saturated with so much. It's not that the dopamine is overwhelming. It's that they can't live without it. That their body just shuts down. Their body can't become so dependent on it. And Jonathan Haidt, in his book *The Coddling of the American Mind*, I don't know if he makes a dopamine connection himself, I don't remember, but he points out that this could very well be what's going on with teenagers and social media. And it's also interesting to point out, I believe, Charles Duhigg makes this claim in The Power of Habit, that dopamine, when you're enjoying a pleasure, actually doesn't come when you actually enjoy it. It comes in the pursuit of it. Right? When do you get dopamine? You get a hit of dopamine when you are about to have it. Right? When the, as he says in that, I think it's in that book, The Power of Habit. It's when the slot machine is rolling that you're getting the dopamine levels. Because the anticipation, the excitement is so,
it's the pulling of the lever or the pushing of the button.
Right, it's the anticipation. The anticipation gives you that dopamine level.
It depends on the desire.
Okay, it could be. But the point is that when you scroll social media, I don't know if people here are familiar with it or not, I'm not really into it, at least with any, I use Twitter to follow the news. I don't follow friends of mine or anything like that. So I don't scroll in the sense that people, I'm looking for the next thing. But the people who look at other people's lives and compare them to their own lives, so their constant scrolling is the constant anticipation which gives them dopamine levels. What's the next thing going to say? What's the next thing going to say? And they're just constantly pushing on the dopamine levels. And then when they don't have that, or when they need that to feel satisfied all the time, because they're like that rat just continuously pressing that button, when they don't have it, or when they don't have what they think they need, so then they actually get the pain and the anxiety is more acute. That's what Jonathan Haidt talks about, how the newest generation, I don't know what they're called, Zers, Generation Z,
Gen X?
Gen X.
Millennials.
There's millennials and then there's millennials and then there's Gen Z, I think.
Gen Z, yeah.
I think it's Gen Z. Either way. So I don't know, I'm a millennial. So the Gen Zers.
So you're not mentally.
I hope not. But whatever that means. But the point is that Jonathan Haidt points out that my age bracket was somewhat saved, or I should say spared, from the real difficult dopamine level issue stimuli of social media. because, I mean, there's plenty of people have developed it, you know, as they got older also, but when I went to high school, no one had, you didn't have it on your phone all the time. There were no smartphones when I was in high school even, as young as I look, not that young, right? So I didn't really grow up with it. I got my first, smartphone. I got it when I moved to Kansas, which was 4 years ago. I mean, 6 years ago, whatever. So, I didn't really, until I was in my mid-20s, I didn't really have that desire or that dopamine cycle. But the Gen Zers who grew up with it, you know, especially if you public school and there's pressure to have cell phones early on and it's a smartphone and tablets and whatever, so they grow up, they develop their brains to need that dopamine. And you can follow statistics of stress and anxiety that comes along with the smartphone generation. It depends what do you mean?
Love the work you're doing.
Oh, no, that's
what I'm saying. If you, Rabbi Paltiel back in Crown Heights, he says, I wish I could be addicted to Torah, whatever.
So those types of things don't really produce the levels of dopamine levels that we're talking about here. They potentially could, and that would be a problem too. There are people, I think she talks about this, Anne Lemke, in her book, of people who are addicted to working out. And that's also a problem. It's also a problem. But the point is that those who are addicted in this way, that they have such, high levels of dopamine in their lives, when they release that dopamine or they don't have that outlet, so then they have increasing levels of anxiety and depression. And that's why the levels of anxiety and depression, especially among girls, but boys also, has been skyrocketing for the last 10 years. And it's very scary, very scary. The more luxuries and pleasures that we have, the more anxiety and stress people are having, and it's because of all those pleasures. They're not interrelated, they're not, independent of each other. They're correlated. So that's why... Yes, but it's always been a painful place. The question is whether you've developed the proper emotional capacity to deal with those difficulties. And if you're constantly looking for dopamine to give you satisfaction, so then those difficulties are more pronounced and the pain is more acute because you lack that what's that guy's name? Anti-Fragile, the book? Got the guy's name. There's a book called Anti-Fragile, where he talks about making yourself not so fragile and making sure you're challenging yourself and dealing with difficulties and stuff like that. It's going to come to me.
What led to the increase of suicide rates?
Yes, suicide rate is going up. It led to the prescriptions of antidepressants. A lot of things have...
What's it called?
Anti-Fragile. I think his name is like an Arabic name, maybe. No, nothing coming up. Yes. What is it? No, that's not it. Either way. So, I didn't read that book. I read his other book. No, I thought his name was Nassim or something.
Nassim, no? Nicholas?
Talib. Talib, that's it. Nassim Talib. Yeah, Nassim Talib, that's the name.
Okay.
Oh, Nassim Nicholas, this is the middle name. Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah, no, it's Nassim Talib is what he goes by. So he has that book. He has other books also. Skin in the Game is the one I was reading. But that's what it's saying here. That's what the Rabbeinu Yonah is explaining this was. To the extent that you'll engage with the pleasure, that's how painful it will be when you don't have it. That's exactly what Lemke talks about in Dopamine Nation. It could be that you'll actually die in some terrible way. To the extent that you're enjoying yourself at the beginning, that's how difficult it will be at the end. All right, not going to go there. It's still a bit of a harsh thing. Yeah.
As long as you can die, pushing the buttons, as long as you can die, you know, getting that dopamine, your life doesn't really matter. Who cares?
Oh, you're saying you're constantly in pleasure mode.
Right.
So what do you're saying the person that's pressing it, who cares? The person that's
now,
pressing
it.
If
you want to threaten somebody that you're going to be, that God is going to punish you if you wasted your life and sinned, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Pleasuring yourself in this world, okay? So God will send you to burning hell. That's.
Well, no, I wouldn't make that the message. The message would be making yourself someone who contributes to
this
life.
You have to strengthen the person, teach the person how to live in this world, how to live with challenges.
Right, sure.
See,
no, that one definitely.
And,
yeah, no.
If you don't get that, then you should have.
That's true.
The whole point, you see.
Historically.
Not today either.
Okay.
See, the father, the rabbi takes precedence over the biological father if both of them are in prison, okay? However, why?
What are we talking about?
Because the father brings you into this world,
okay.
The rabbi brings you
to the next
world.
But
what if you don't have a father, and you don't know how to live in this world?
Yeah, then we're talking about hypotheticals, yeah.
And so all the rabbi can offer you is a base measure.
Yeah, yeah.
All your life.
Okay.
Pouring over the book.
Yeah.
They'll give you an ugly wife, and they'll yell at you.
All right, I think we're a little off the beaten path here. Yeah, yeah, I think we're off the path here. But the point is that Bikara Saimya Nuach, if you're the person who is going to stray from the path for the sake of desires, so then you'll find most comfortable with the Rifa'im, those who are weakened state. Ish machzor ohev simcha. The lover of pleasure will be a man who lacks. It's interesting that the article translation switches the words around. I would have said it the way that the words are. Ish machzor, a person who's lacking, ohev simcha. A person who is lacking, who doesn't have the fortitude to be of upstanding character, so then they will love pleasure. Because they need a distraction. They need something to bring them joy in life. I've thought this for a long time. The last few years. That the increase in political activism is a direct correlation to the decrease in religious commitments. Because I think that political activism or any kind of social activism is a substitute for feeling some kind of enjoyment or some kind of purpose. People are looking for purpose.
They're getting tired of God bringing Mashiach. So we're going to try to bring Mashiach. We're going to make our own Mashiach.
Okay, that's interesting. That's an interesting one.
Communism is basically a Jewish heresy.
I hear you. Yeah, that's not a bad point. But that's what Marx meant when he said that religion is the opiate of the masses.
Yeah.
Because in a certain sense, when you believe in something, it gives you that sense of purpose and satisfaction. Now, he happens to be saying that post facto, where he thinks that, the Jews, whatever they do, or anyone, these religious people, whatever they do, they just say it's from God and everything's okay. Now, we see it from the front end, and we say, no, we want to commit because we believe these things are important, not because we feel good about them. Afterwards, maybe if something bad happens, we can bring some kind of religious context to it. But either way, the point is that if you don't have that sense of purpose and that sense of longing for something, greater than yourself, so then you will find other ways to fill that void. You'll find other ways to fill the void. I read a fascinating article when I was in Kansas 5 years ago or so about why the most successful films are a specific genre. They want to guess what kind of genre are the most successful films, and why they keep making new ones or repeats of the old ones.
Yeah.
What's the kind? What kind of genre are we talking about?
Scary ones.
Science fiction, what did you say?
Scary ones.
Scary. I don't know if scary is as successful as other ones. They're successful, but the most successful ones, the ones that make the most money in the box office, are superhero movies.
That's right.
Every few months, you can't go another month without another remake of Spider-Man or Superman or this brand new thing that no one's ever heard of, except if you're a comic fanatic, right? You're all these random superheroes. What's with all the superheroes? because people need the supernatural. They need to feel that there's something beyond the way we see the world. And in that sense, it's also sort of trying to fill that void of something that people are missing. But that's what the pasuk perhaps means. Ish ma'asur, if you're missing something, so then oyev simcha, you'll try to fill it with all these other pleasures of the world. Oyev yayin v'shemen, lo yashir. And someone, this is somewhat connected, but not entirely, someone who loves wine and oil will not be rich. Why? Because they'll spend it on the wine and the oil. Right? The point is that when you have an addiction, and that's what brings you satisfaction, unfortunately, so then you will stop at no end to get to that satisfaction. This book, The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, that he talks about, I don't know 100%, for some reason I'm thinking in my head, I think I listened to it like 3 years ago, in my mind, I'm hearing it from a woman's voice, and Charles is not a woman, so I'm wondering if it's the same book or not. But either way, the stories he tells about this person who was addicted to gambling, scary. Taking mortgages out of, second mortgages in order to go play the slots. Mortgaging your entire wealth because you need to feed the addiction. And it's a psychological need. It's an actual problem in the brain that you can't get past it. That's why it takes years of therapy to get past it. And it's a very scary thing. To such an extent, I believe, I don't think it was successful, but there was a whole court case against the casinos who tried to make you succumb to the different things. They have different tactics to bring you in. And they'll even give you like free money. Here's free $10,000 because they know this person has spent $100,000 at the casino. What's $10,000 after you gave us $100,000? So here's $10,000 free dollars. How's the person going to pay? How's the person going to pass that up when they're addicted to gambling? Here's $10,000. That's what they do. So I don't remember. I'm sure some court cases have been successful. If I remember that book, in that book it wasn't successful. But either way, that's what it means. Yain v'shem and lo yashir. If you love wine and oil so much, and obviously wine and oil is representative of sort of physical addictions, so then lo yashir, you will never recoup all of that money. That's in a simple sense. I'm sure there's more in terms of a spiritual sense. Lo yashir, you will never enrich your life if you're just stuck chasing after these addictive behaviors. Ish machzor ohev simcha, someone who's lacking will love joy, right, pleasure. And ohev yayin v'shem, and someone who loves wine and oil, lo yashir, he will not ever, become rich or wealthy. And I said before that maybe it's referring to a spiritual. And look at that, the Ralbaj says exactly that. See if we can get to it quickly. Plus Aleph, just saw the Ralbaj quoted in a footnote. Let's see the Ralbaj. This is Yud Zion. Aval ha'oev yayin v'shem and lishtos l'mshoach. As b'sara b'saf nukim, he interprets oil to be sort of lathering. What's the word? Lathering up. What's the word? Were you lathering? Lathering, right, with a th. So lathering up with oil, right? You're just indulging your body. Zeh lo yashir ki yichlam mamono. You'll lose out money. Umavashu ish machzor. Besides being a person of lacking, yichlagam mamono. You'll also lose out on your money. Oh, this is the Malvim. Sorry, I'm looking in the wrong place. That's what we just said, that if you're so addicted, you're going to lose out on your money. But then he says, Yamishu hu oe b'asmachos agufios, this is on the bottom of Reish Mem, li'isaning b'tavasav, hu ish machzor ki be'elu ha'tavos ye'aved hono. With all of those desires, you're going to lose your wealth. U'mishu oe v'yayin v'yeh home li'isaneg, Behem lo yashir lezos hasiba be'ena v'zeh ma sheyikre lebali zos haschuna mehara gam bedvar magufim an shezeh husiva el shelo yikne ha'adam shum shlemus nafshi'i. It's not just going to affect the person's physical well-being and their financial wealth, but even to such an extent that they will not shelo yikne ha'adam shum shlemus nafshi'i. They will not acquire a fullness of their spirit. You know what's a greater lacking? When you have a certain understanding of the world, a certain moral compass, if you will. So that's the Rabbag. I remember a statement from the Maharal, and because I heard a person sort of, I can hear the person, the Rav who said, I think it was Ephraim Waxman, a very fiery speaker. He quoted the Maharal in a specific Mishnah, we don't have to go through it in Navos, where he says, Ki al yedei ha-Torah yushlam ha-Adam. Because through Torah values, a person is completed. But if you don't have Torah values, so then you will constantly try to fill up that void in trying to make yourself feel satisfied. Okay, on to Yud Ches. Pasuk Yud Ches. 21:18. Kofer la tzadik rasha. Kofer la tzadik rasha. V'sachas yisharim bogeis. How do you translate this word? Kofer could mean different things, but Rashi says, Sadik nechlatz for Rasha ba'tachtav kegon Mordechai v'Haman. Kofer l'sadik Rasha. Hold on. This sounds theologically challenging. I'll say it. But basically what it means is the atonement of the tzaddik is the rasha, and in substitute for the righteous is the rebellious. See how the archbishop says, the evil doer will be an atonement for the righteous one, and the faithless one for the upright. I will be honest here, this one sounds a little uncomfortable. The art scroll. I'm on Yud Ches. Pasuk Yud Ches. Yud Ches. 18. Kofer Lasadik. So Rashi said,
where's the Malbim?
Malbim's on the left. We haven't quoted from him yet. Musar HaChachma is the Malbim's main commentary. The one on the right side of that. Let's see what the Malbim says now that you're looking at it. He says in Yechas towards the bottom, right in the middle of the wide lines. Kofer l'tzadik rasha tachas. Hu mimin ha-mischayev tachas, ha-nefesh tachas nefesh. Again, ha-kofer built mimin ha-mischayev. She-yichaper bam b'mamon v'yelo kapara. Yomar ki she-Hashem danes ha-olam yishbo pein ha-tzadik v'ha-rasha. When Hashem judges the world, He judges relative from between he compares the tzaddik and the rasha. Vayotzei rasha b'dino yechaper v'misaso al tzaddik. And the one who comes out as being the evildoer should atone with his death on behalf of the tzaddik. Ki tzaddik v'rasha him shemus yichusim erach ze'azeh v'os yudov gamis yim haya tzaddik yotzei chayiv yizka v'erach ha-rasha v'chavro. Again, I don't know who else to say it, so I'm just going to say it. It sounds like even if the tzaddik is worthy of some kind of punishment, the rasha will get it instead. I don't know what that means. That sounds to me a little bit. Let me see how the art school footnote says it. Unlike the base pleasures pursuing individuals described in previous verses, the subject of this verse not only responds enthusiastically to a request for aid, he also seeks opportunities to bestow kindness. Okay? Some people help only when asked, perhaps because the sight of someone's distress makes them uncomfortable. Someone who actively seeks to assist others exhibits a truly good nature. What in the world? This doesn't have anything to do with the pasuk. Such a person has earned himself life's greatest blessings, both in this world and in the world to come. He will find life. Oh, I'm in the wrong pasuk, that's why. That makes sense. Okay, sorry. The evildoer will be atoned. If a heavenly decree against a righteous man is overridden by his merits, the attribute of justice remains unsatisfied unless that decree is realized somehow, and so it shifts onto an evildoer. I don't know about this one. Rav Hirsch applies the verse to a scrupulous person who refuses to join a dishonest commercial venture. An evil man takes the opportunity which brings about his destruction. That makes more sense, but I don't see how you see that in the words. Kofar la tzadik Russia. I don't know. Yeah, here we're talking about Chana, we're in chapter 21. Kofar la tzadik Russia. Sachas Yisharim Bogid. Kofar la tzadik Russia. The word kofar is very challenging here.
Just the idea of
righteous.
He who denies righteousness is a
Russia. Not really sure. I don't think that works. Tzaddik here is definitely the noun, not the attribute. The person who is a tzaddik. Yeah, I'm not sure about this topic. I mean, I know what it meant. I just told you what it meant, at least according to some, but there's got to be more to it, or at least I'd hope there'd be more to it. I think what it means is that Kofar la tzadik Russia is just that the repayment of a tzadik. Sometimes kofar could mean not just atonement, but the repayment, I think. So here, maybe it's the repayment of the tzaddik is the Russia's downfall. Rash uses the example of Mordechai and Haman. Did Mordechai need atonement? No. So that's why I'm thinking maybe Rashi thinks it just means sort of the atonement or the compensation of the tzaddik is the downfall of the Russia. Maybe. I don't know. But let's keep going. Tov Shevet Be'eretz Midbar. Good to sit in a land of desert, me'eshes midyanim v'chaas. Better to dwell in a wasteland than with a woman of contention and anger. We saw this like a few weeks ago, Turner remembers, about better to be sitting on the corner of a roof than to be with a contentious woman. So here what it means is, and this is the same type of thing that when I said it back, it was a few weeks ago, I said the same thing, that there's a certain pain which is associated with relationships, which is much more difficult than the pain which is associated with physical lacking. You can be lacking physical, and it would hurt, and it's painful, and it's difficult, and it's challenging, but there's nothing more painful than a relationship that's gone sour. That person that you have to be with, right, your wife, that relationship has gone sour to such an extent that your life is miserable. Your life is miserable. You'd rather be starving in a wasteland than having the relationship turmoil of being with someone that's always fighting with you. That's what we're saying here. Again, I'm not sure why we're repeating it. Well, Shlomo Melech does use different words, though. So maybe there's something else to it. But he says, oh, so the Rabbeinu Yonah quotes the roof case. Over there was talking about being with other people also. This is strictly your wife. Strictly being with your wife. Okay. Yeah. Better to be with no one than to be with someone contentious. That's an interesting claim. Mitzvah David points out that better to be with nobody than to be with someone who's going to make your life difficult. Maybe you would think that the benefit of companionship outweighs the downside of contention. Shlomo Melech, no. Better to not even have companionship than to have a bad one. That's interesting. It's all a matter of, proportions or gradations of that. Says the Malvin, Kfar Amar Lamal Shetov, Lashev Zalpinas Gag, Meshes Ben Yonim, Im Ena Balas Kas, Rak Moreres Medanim, Im Shecheineho, Bnei Beis, Atarach Lezrachim, Ena Chabura, right? It's not just the spouse, but also all of their friends. V'yadu Rima Alpinas Gag, Shaltim Se Im Milu Yizgote, Aval Im Hayo Balas Kas, Chesene Shem Am Shama. Okay. The previous pasuk, that's interesting. The previous pasuk was saying, go up onto the roof. Why go up onto the roof? because the spouse and their contentious friends are inside. So better to go up on the roof where they're not going to be than to be with all those people inside. The problem is that even when those people leave, the wife can go out and scream at you from the front lawn. Right? So it says to Malbim, you're still going to have a problem. That's why this pasuk is here. Better to go away, not sit on your roof, but go out of town, leave. Better that than to stay in that contention. You know, it's sometimes a difficult discussion, but people come to me with, their marriage issues, and obviously as first responder, if it's a first timer, so then it's my responsibility to try to work through it with them. You know, we don't want people to get divorced. And you try, and if you can't, if there's really no recourse, and if one or both of the parties are just not budging, they're not coming close, they're not getting over whatever issues there are, so then, Tov Lasheves B'Midbar, better to be alone somewhere else than to be together. That's, the Torah is Lahavdil, obviously, I'm making a difference. This is not Catholicism, right? This is not, Mormonism or other sects of religion or other types of religions where we will force you to stay in a marriage if it's no good, right? There's a mitzvah in the Torah to get divorced. It's a mitzvah. You get divorced and it counts as a mitzvah d'oraisa. Why? Because sometimes it's an obligation to get rid of a bad marriage. That's what it's saying here. Tov sheves be'eretz midbar me'eshes midyanim. Better to live in a wasteland and not be married than to be with a spouse who is causing you turmoil. So always important to remember, but also important to not pull that trigger too soon, because we have the obligation to try to make things work too. And the divorce rate is going up. That also could be connected to a lot of the things going on in the modern world with technology and social media and things like that. But again, sometimes that addiction is just, you can't release yourself from it, especially if everybody else is doing it, so you don't look at it as an addiction, which is problematic. Pasuk Yutes, that was Yutes. Pasuk Chas, Otsar Nechmad V'Shemen Bin Ve'Chacham. A desirable treasure. Otsar is like a warehouse of treasure, not just a treasure, but okay. But Otsar Nechmad V'Shemen Bin Ve'Chacham. And Nave is like a house, right? In the home of the wise person, there is a treasure of, a desirable treasure and oil in that house. Uchfil Adam Yivalanu. And the fool of a man swallows it up. I'm not 100% sure if these are the same timeline or we're talking about different people here, but Rav Hirsch explains the person does not necessarily need wisdom to become rich, as he may receive a stroke of good fortune. He does, however, have to use his money wisely to retain his wealth. Foolish people, however, squander their acquisitions wastefully. So here, Otsar Nechmad V'Shemen Bin Ve'Chacham, what it means is not that there's a certain richness in every wisdom wise person's home, but when a wise person gets those riches, so they will continue. Nechmad, I don't know where they get this translation of continue from. It's not in the pasuk, but it's the way of a wise person to save things up for the time that you need him. Right? The person who's foolish doesn't save up and just uses things up, once they get them. There's a lot of money management, which I think the schooling system fails kids, but kids nowadays need it more than ever. I mean, it's never been taught properly, right? There's no money management courses in high school or even in college that are prerequisites for life, even though those are the institutions of education that are supposed to be sort of guiding you and preparing you for life. But it's never taught unless you're like majoring in economics or something like that. But if there's one thing which is so central to a person's livelihood, it's how they manage their money. And unfortunately, because we live in an economy which not only avails you to so much commerce, but it also, we live in a culture that promotes so many necessities in our lifestyles. Does a person really need a smartphone and really need a big phone plan for it? Now, you can get them for relatively cheap, but do you also need unlimited data, and do you also need internet at home, and do you also need, you know, the television, and you also need cable, and you also need, all of these things are things that we have foisted upon ourselves because everybody else does it. Is it necessarily the case? You need all that stuff? But people are living paycheck to paycheck, right? They're poor. Why are they poor? Because they're buying all this stuff they don't need, right? Nobody is, you know, thinking, you know, I could do without 500 extra channels. No, that's part of the necessities of life, right? I always remember there's this, what was that movie called? I watched it in high school. There's a movie with an older guy, and he's like helping his younger self. It like goes back in time.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, at least there's more than one movie like that.
I don't know, but the point is that the kid transported to his house, or he transported to his. Maybe. It could be, But the kid was in his living room, the older one's living room, and I always remember this line. The kid is surfing through the channels, and he goes, 100 channels, and there's nothing on? What does that mean? There are 100 channels, but I don't want to watch any of them. Right? We feel like we need more, right? Used to be, I don't know if you're old enough to remember this, but when I was growing up even, you know, there were like a few channels just because I had this specific kind of television, right? There are 4 channels. You like it, so watch it. If you don't like it, so tough nugs, go do something else. And you learn to, you know, to watch something which is maybe not your favorite. Nowadays, you don't like something, so then you go on Netflix and you find something you like. You don't have to sit through whatever's on television, right? So nowadays we have such, you know, we have such fulfillment of our instantaneous desires that that ultimately we're using all of our money to get all the desires. It connects to the original stuff. Chsil Adami Valanu, a person who's foolish and doesn't plan for the future and doesn't feel the need to save up, they're living paycheck to paycheck, and they're going to be swallowed up, or they will swallow it up, the wealth that they have. Whereas the chacham, it's an otzar. He has a whole storehouse full of all the stuff that he needs. Right? People, at the beginning of COVID, piling up all of the toilet paper that they can find. Right? Some people have tons of stuff in their storage. But the point is that if you don't act wisely and you just act based on your impulsive desires to fulfill them right now, so then you're going to pay for it right now. Like I said about the guy who's addicted to gambling, he gave up all of his money in the moment that he got it so that he can go, fulfill his addiction. So in many ways, that's what's going to use up all of your money. And then there's the whole student loan thing, which has other aspects to the problem, but not going to get into that right now. Lastly, Rodev Stakov Achesed Yimsachaim Stakov Achavod. Someone who pursues righteousness and kindness will find life, righteousness, and honor. I feel like I don't even have to talk about that pasuk. If you're willing to give to other people, it will be fulfilling to you. Right? This is a different type of satisfaction. There are different kinds of satisfaction. There's the satisfaction which brings you instantaneous pleasure, and then there's the satisfaction which brings you a certain satisfaction of life. You feel like you're doing something purposeful. You feel like you're doing something good. When you're kind, you will find life. Right? This is different than the person who said before that Adam Toa Midera Chaska Bikar Rafaim Menuach, that person who is veering off the path for pleasures, so they will be with the Rafaim. They will be with those who are dead. Here, however, those who give to others, who are helpful to others, so you'll find life. That will be the most satisfying to you. Not just literally because Hashem will reward you with life. You will find satisfaction in life. I've talked about this one book, The Power of Meaning. I feel like a lot of these titles of the books are all the same. But The Power of Meaning by Emily Esfahana Smith. A wonderful book, although it's not, you know, all-inclusive. But she talks about one of the 4 components of meaning is feeling like you're contributing to the world. You're doing something for somebody else which is greater than you. And that's certainly a worthwhile endeavor, as you see here from Shlomo HaMelech. The only difference is one is instantaneous pleasure, and one is the satisfaction of doing something right, which doesn't give you that same kind of dopamine hit. You recognize that you're doing something good, but you don't really feel it in the same way, so it's not as pleasurable. But you feel better about yourself in the long term. It's a more enduring type of pleasure than just instantaneous ones, which come and go the second they leave your lips. Okay, we'll continue that in a couple weeks' time, because next week is Legends and Lessons. Yeah, we're starting this weekend. Okay, I wish you have a good night.